Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, guys. Dave Glover Show. It is Paranormal Wednesday, and my guest today is Kevin Knuth. He is the professor of physics at the University of Albany, former NASA research scientist, just really, really impressive guy. Let's welcome him now. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, how are you?
I am great.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for being on. I would love to say we have a lot in common, but we couldn't have less, except for this. You'll appreciate this. I went to law school 30 years ago, and a couple years out, I didn't like it and decided I was going to be an astrophysicist. True story.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to Wash U, my alma mater, said I'd like to get a degree in astrophysics, and they said, how are you at mathematics? And I said, I only took through ninth grade algebra, and I got a D, and they laughed, and I left, and that was it.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. No, I think they saved me some anguish, so.
Well, we do have some musical tastes in common. I appreciated the ELO tune in your intro music.
There you go. So, start me off at the beginning. I mean, I want to know about your career. Go back to when you were just a young whippersnapper scientist and how you took the path that you did.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I was working on my PhD in physics, and I was always interested in general relativity and quantum field theory and that sort of work, more theoretical work. And basically, my friends weren't getting jobs. And so this was in the early 90s, and so chaos theory and nonlinear dynamics was kind of a new thing. So I decided to go into that instead. And so I actually went into biophysics, and I actually studied nonlinear dynamics of human brain activity. And so I got my PhD doing that, and then my postdoctoral work was mostly in neuroscience, actually. And so I did a good bit of neuroscience work and learned a lot of useful data analysis techniques while doing that. And when I was I was presenting some work at a neuroscience conference in Washington, D.C., and decided to stay with one of my good friends from graduate school was living there. And she was an astrophysicist and her husband was an astronomer. And so I stayed with them, and basically her husband came home that night frustrated. He was trying to build an instrument and he was having trouble with the data analysis. And so I helped him out with the algorithm design for analyzing the data, and he just after dinner, and he went upstairs and coded it up, and by 10 p.m. it was working. So we ended up writing a paper on astrophysics together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always loved astrophysics and, you know, would have loved to go into that, but but I just ended up taking a different path at that point. So so he invited me out to Kitt Peak to go observing once, and then he had me go to Cerro Tololo in Chile to observe, and I worked on analyzing data for him, and so we had a few projects together, and so I got into astrophysics that way. And around that time, there was an opening in the Intelligent Systems Division at NASA Ames, and I knew several of the guys there from the data analysis techniques we used were all the same, so we knew each other this way. And so I applied for that position and then went off to NASA.
So Kevin, NASA, to all of us mere mortals, is like saying the FBI or the CIA. Like, everything we know is from movies and comic books, and it's just larger than life. Does it live up to its reputation, or once you get there, is it just another job?
No, it lives up to its reputation. The people live up to their reputation. They're some of the most brilliant people I've ever had the opportunity to work with, and I really, really appreciated that about NASA. That was one of the best things about being there. It's a great feeling to not be the smartest guy in the room.
That's interesting.
You know, and to have everyone has their own special talents, and so you get a team of NASA scientists working on a problem and they'll solve it. They're just going to handle it because everyone has the ability to do it. And so, and working together. And that was really a great that was a great feeling about working at NASA.
Yeah, Professor.
And I still collaborate. I still collaborate with some of my NASA colleagues as well. So I'm in touch with them and still work with them. So,
Professor, this is Tony Colombo.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, could you just talk about what you did at NASA? Like when you were at NASA, what was your primary function there? What were you responsible for?
Well, I mostly designed artificial intelligence algorithms and machine learning algorithms to analyze data. I worked on data from the Hubble Space Telescope, and we were looking at planetary nebulae. These are clouds of gas that surround stars that are basically dying. They've gone through the red giant phase, and they basically collapse, and they puff off their atmospheres. And so we were studying those nebula, and I was working to make 3D models of the nebula. We needed 3D models of these clouds of gas so that we could use them as distance markers in the galaxy. Strangely, we don't have a good feeling for how far away things are in the galaxy. We're very good at measuring distances for close-by objects because you can measure them with parallax, with angles, and watching how the stars move as the Earth moves in its orbit. And then really far away things, you know, other galaxies, you can use the expansion of the universe to estimate those distances. You get a redshift, and you can use the redshift to estimate distances. But for more distant objects in our galaxy, it's very difficult to estimate distances that way. So we were using these things as distance markers.
So, Professor, you're on the show today, obviously, because of your work and opinions on UFOs. Tell me about that.
Oh, right. So, let's see. I first was introduced to the idea, well, of course, as a young boy, you see these shows like In Search Of and that with UFOs, and that was always exciting and intriguing, and I was smart enough to realize that most, you know, lights in the sky that people see are pretty, you know, mundane things, and that they're often misidentified. But I think I was first really introduced to this when I went away to graduate school in Montana. I grew up in Wisconsin, and I moved to Montana in the fall of 1988. And it was probably our second week in school there, and there was a cattle mutilation in Bozeman, Montana. And it was, you know, these two cows were killed, and it was very bizarre. And it was all over the news, and people were kind of freaked out about it. And some people had seen UFOs that night. And so there was a lot of talk, you know, did aliens do this or what? So a lot of us new graduate students, we had just moved out to Montana, and I'd never heard of cattle mutilations before. As far as I knew, we didn't have that sort of thing in Wisconsin. And so some of those graduate students were talking about this in the hallway, like, what is this all about? This is crazy. And you know, and these explanations they have are crazy. They're either Satanists or aliens. And we were like, what? So what kind of place did we just move to? And that was basically the discussion that was going on. And one of the professors came down the hall and saw this animated discussion, the group of people, and came to find out what we were talking about. We explained, and he said, well, yeah, you know, there are often cattle mutilations here. You know, they're not that common, but they happen. And no one ever really figures it out. And some people think they might be aliens, but no one knows what causes it. And then he said, but what's even stranger is, he said, I've got some friends who work up at Malmstrom Air Force Base in the Air Force, and they have problems up at Malmstrom Air Force Base with UFOs flying over our ICBM missile sites and shutting down missiles. And we listened politely, and when he walked away, we laughed our butts off, because it was really, that's a pretty outlandish thing to say. And so... You know, I remembered that. I didn't quite imagine that could be true. And it wasn't until years later, I was actually about maybe 2010 or so, I was preparing to teach an astrophysics class. So what is this, like 30 years later? I'm getting ready to teach an astrophysics class, and I had students asking me about the possibilities of aliens and visiting Earth and this. And so I thought, well, let me look into this a little bit, you know, so I can provide some details, at least theoretical details of what might be expected. So I was poking around online, and I happened to stumble across a YouTube video of a press conference that Robert Hastings had held in D.C., where he had several former Air Force personnel discussing UFO incursions on nuclear weapons sites. And three of the guys were from Malmstrom Air Force Base, and I watched the whole video. Was like an hour and a half long, and you know, the whole press conference, an hour and a half long, and they went through six guys talking about their experiences, and these were back in 1960s. And all I could think was this, I heard about this in 1988 and thought it was ridiculous, but here you've got six people who are also saying it happened, and they're saying it happened in the 1960s. And I just had a hard time imagining that professionals, especially professionals who are charged with taking care of our nuclear weapons, would be of a silly mindset to believe in some ridiculous idea if there wasn't some element of truth to it. So if they did, I would worry. So it kind of opened my eyes a little bit and made me think, well, wait a minute, maybe there is something to this. And maybe we've just been laughing it off and ignoring it, which maybe isn't a good idea. And that's basically how I got interested in this.
Okay. Kevin, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and find out what it is that you believe about the truth on UFOs. Quick break, right back. Paranormal Wednesday.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, guys. 5:30 DGS Paranormal Wednesday. My guest is Kevin Knuth, who's a professor of physics at the University of Albany. Kevin, so jumping right to it, what is your opinion on UFOs and what it may be that we're seeing and especially our Navy pilots are chasing?
Well, I mean, I'm a physicist, so I don't care so much about what I believe. I want to know. Knowing is more important and more significant than believing. And so what I do know is that the Navy has released a good bit of data at this point and a lot of information about encounters that the Navy pilots have had with these objects. These objects appear to be real. They're real physical objects. I actually have been working today on analyzing one of the infrared videos that was released by the Navy, and I'm working to estimate the acceleration of the craft in the video, or the object in the video. So these accelerations are really insane. The one I was looking at today is on the order of about 40 Gs of acceleration, which is already pretty high. A human couldn't withstand more than 25 Gs. And, you know, our fighter jets probably can't withstand more than about 15 Gs before their wings start ripping off. So to have something, you know, that the plane is for that, or one of our Navy F-18s is following, and then all of a sudden it takes off at 40 Gs of acceleration is pretty significant. But I've been in contact with one of the radar operators on the USS Princeton, and he was telling me about how they had observed these objects dropping from 28,000 feet to sea level in 0.78 seconds. And so you can estimate the minimum acceleration in that case. So to do that, you'd have to accelerate at least 5,700 Gs of acceleration, which is really insane. I don't know how you would do that. I don't know. Most equipment wouldn't survive that. I can't imagine anything living surviving that. So clearly these are something, you know, these are real physical objects. There's a technical capability that we just don't have, and it's quite remarkable.
Oh, I'm looking at a piece you did here for Cosmos Magazine, and you say the odds of life existing outside of Earth are actually higher than if they didn't exist. Can you tell us about that?
I don't know if I did anything for Cosmos. Is that mine for real, or is it an article that wrote about one of my, I wrote an article for The Conversation.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Year.
They might have appropriated that for Cosmos.
They might have appropriated that. So they might, yeah, I think they probably changed the wording. So I'm not sure what they would refer to. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So could you talk about, you just mentioned the that these crafts are real, that they're real, they're something that we have observed, and they're something that are what we know as far as equipment and things that we have here on the planet would not stand up to the force that they are traveling at. Is it possible that there is another country? Is there that there is technology on this earth that we have not gotten here in the United States that could be creating something like this? Or in your opinion, is the only place that it could be coming from is somewhere that is not our planet?
It's that's still possible. The it's not known who made these craft. It's not known where they're from. It's not known what the technology is precisely. It's not known how they fly. It's not known what they're doing here. So there's a lot that's still not known. It has to be able to declare something as being extraterrestrial would be extremely difficult. So that's still a potential hypothesis, but it's still possible that somebody else here on Earth made it. The problem is that if someone here on Earth made it, then if it's technology owned, you know, from another country, then, you know, then we should be worried, because these things are really way beyond anything I know that we are able to do. And in fact, there was an article, I think in Quora magazine yesterday or last week, where there was a physicist from Lockheed Martin had wrote that, you know, if these are, you know, made by any other government or even our government, then they're playing all of the aeronautical engineers for fools, because we've got, why are we pumping $60 billion into the development of the F-35 that can only go Mach 2? Mm-hmm. You know, these things have been clocked. These things have been clocked on radar at Mach or at 35,000 miles an hour through the atmosphere, which is double orbital speed. It's really insane. So
Kevin, just as a layman and as a radio show host, I get the sense that overall people are taking this more seriously, and with the release of these videos and DOD saying, yes, they're real objects, we don't know what they are. Do you get the sense within your discipline, within physicists, that they are taking more notice of this?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, people are now paying attention, and I think for a while, you know, it's been, you know, there have been people interested in possibilities of life elsewhere, and it's not off the table that they could visit here. It was just imagined that it would be low probability, but now with these things apparently being observed on a regular basis by the Navy, and it being a problem for them, mm-hmm. Has really woken people up a great deal. You know, I've got several of my colleagues are now taking this a lot more seriously than they had, and I think that's important, because we have here, you know, if this is a potential threat, we need to know about it. If it's not a threat, you know, here's a potential for new technologies, which would be really pretty amazing. This would be, you know, we don't know where they're from, so I couldn't say that they were extraterrestrial for sure. We don't know. But if they were, or if they're not of this earth, then it's one of the greatest discoveries in human history. So I myself looked at it that way and thought, well, you know, if this is the case, I want to be in on this. I don't want to, I'm not going to let this one slip by in my career. So,
Kevin, where do people find more about your work?
I have a website where I have a lot of my work. I do work now, most of my research is actually in exoplanet detection and characterization, and so I have some of this on my website at the University of Albany.
Me too.
Funny.
And so that, I don't have much about UFOs there. I'm working on a paper right now, working on estimating the accelerations and flight characteristics of some of these observed craft. So that eventually will be a paper that I'll put on my website. So
excellent. Well, thanks for sharing your time with us today. We really appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks so much.
Selling a little or a lot?
Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
542 DGS. So I've not heard of this. There's a story out there that someone shoved a blues player into a pool holding the Stanley Cup.
Yes. You want to do it? Or you want me to do it?
Go ahead if you have it. I've got it too.
So Tyson Fury, who is a heavyweight boxer who just won a fight and is a champion, was having a party at a place in Las Vegas. And the Blues were there with the Stanley Cup, and the two parties sort of commingled. And at first, it was a lot of fun. And this guy, there's pictures of Tyson Fury with Blues players, and they've got the cup, and they're taking pictures, and they're having a good time. Well, then apparently at some point, the party started to become more about the Blues, and somebody said, play Gloria, and they started playing Gloria, and the sort of attention shifted off of the Tyson Fury and onto the Blues. And by all these reports, I'm reading several different stories that pretty much all say the same thing, that once Gloria started playing and one of the Blues lifted up the Stanley Cup and people were cheering and singing along, that one of this guy's entourage, Tyson Fury's entourage, made his way over and told like the Blues, hey, this isn't about you, and pushed one of the players with this cup into a pool. And there was some tension about, hey, you're stealing our spotlight. And what's so funny is I don't usually look at comment boards, but they're all saying, who the F is Tyson Fury? And these are national, these aren't St. Louis websites, you know, like these are national stories and these different websites. And they're like, and I was the same way. Who is Tyson Fury? I'm not. Hockey is not as popular as baseball and basketball and football and all that. So, you know, a hockey team and its players aren't going to be as famous around the country as a football player would be, or a baseball player, a basketball player would be. But I still think they outrank Tyson Fury.
Yeah,
whoever this guy is.
So, starting over.
And we're going to break.
Rachel, you have headlines?
I do, and headlines is brought to you by Schnucks, the big headline at Schnucks this week. With real ice cream, with dozens of indulgent flavors like frosted sugar cookie, there are surprises in store. Be surprised by the new Schnucks ice cream today. The only reason I really wanted to do headlines today is because I have a meth squirrel update. Do we have the sound ready?
Yeah, you ready?
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Gentle. The suspected attack squirrel owner has surfaced. And this afternoon, he went live on Facebook with another squirrel. Limestone County's investigator confirms this is the man that they're looking for, Mickey Ponk. They say he held a squirrel captive and fed it meth to make it more aggressive. But in Ponk's video, he says his squirrel is not on meth.
His squirrel is not on meth.
Fake news?
I guess so. So I apologize to the listening audience. I got a bad lead yesterday on this meth squirrel.
Or maybe Mickey Polk is a liar.
It could be.
Hey,
there's
if you can't
meth
trust
in the
a meth dealer.
You can't trust Mickey Polk. Who can you trust?
Who can you trust?
The part that I didn't even realize until Ryan just played the sound again for me is he went live with another squirrel. So this is like the squirrel whisperer. I don't know anyone who has a pet squirrel, but this guy has multiple squirrels under his thumb.
Well, they can get meth.
Yeah, they come to him.
Yeah.
Word's out.
The word is out.
It looks like this guy is still at large. He's probably got the entire squirrel community helping
him. To all
him.
Fellow squirrels.
He's like Aquaman, but with squirrels.
If you want some meth, Mickey Polk has your back.
Bunch of squirrels out there on the corners dancing.
Mickey Polk has your hookup.
Trying to get a couple bucks. Hey, look, I swear to God, I'm just trying to catch the bus.
One hit a day, Mickey, and I won't ever let anybody come into this house.
His squirrel was not on meth.
You give me my fix, and I got this door covered. Nobody will enter.
This is just absolutely crazy. To take a more serious turn, 22 more St. Louis police officers.
We should have started with that one.
No, we had to lead with the meat and potatoes. 22 more St. Louis police officers have been added to the list of cops on Kim Gardner's exclusion list. So now we have 59 officers where they will not take cases that they present.
Keeping St. Louis safe.
I get investigating if you think racist stuff is going on or shady stuff is going on. I get investigating, but refusing to take any case that they bring in, why are they even allowed to still be on the force at that? And yeah. This is not a knock against the police officers. This is, why are you wasting your time
letting
people go out and do their jobs if you're not going to do your
job? What happens when a prosecutor is not a prosecutor?
Right.
Yeah. If they're racist and they are, if they're guilty of holding these beliefs and perpetrating them, then they shouldn't be police officers. While they're police officers,
let them be police
officers.
They
have to be police officers, and you have to take their cases, and they have to be able to do their jobs. Find the truth, and if they shouldn't be police officers, then take them off the force so they're not police officers. But while they're police officers, you have to let them do their jobs.
So these 22 officers were put on the list because they have been a part of this. I don't know if you've seen this on the Riverfront Times. They seem to be covering it more than anyone else. But hey, we went through and we combed through all these officers' Facebook pages and we found these xenophobic, racist posts. So these are all officers who have been involved with that. That investigation is ongoing. So I guess I understand why they would be put on the list. But the Police Officers Association says in the past, there have been no mandates for how you get on the list. It's just, you're bad, so we put you on the list. Kim Gardner has not been specific with how these people ended up on the...
Yeah, and ignore the fact that she's under investigation, probably will be indicted, she's fighting for her political life, and there are certain cops who don't play her game. Oh my gosh, they end up on the list.
Yeah.
What happens to all those cases? All can they be brought back after she's gone, or is it just, nope, those are done?
I think they're just refusing
to attorney,
take them at all.
I can tell you they'll never bring those cases. Because any defense attorney worth their salt, all you have to do is say, perfect, yeah, the arresting officer, let me tell you about the list that they've been on. Mm-hmm.
They're permanently banned, meaning her office won't issue charges, won't apply for search warrants they seek, and won't consider cases in which they are essential witnesses. So you're just a pariah at that
point.
That's
a joke.
Unbelievable.
That's a joke.
Let's see. San Francisco could be the first city in the United States to ban e-cigarette sales. The ban was approved unanimously over concerns of youth vaping. So you can't get it at all in San Francisco. It looks like a lot of cities and a lot of states are looking at banning the flavored tobacco because it just seems, tailor-made for tweens. Coca-Cola and Pepsi are the leaders in ocean-polluting plastics, according to a new report. It seems like you see a story every day with, a whale came up on shore and its stomach was completely full of plastic soda bottles. Coke is the worst offender. Pepsi is the second.
Well, is Coke and Pepsi the worst offenders? Are they dumping the plastic?
Right.
Are the companies dumping the plastic into the ocean?
That's a good point.
Or are people throwing their Coke bottles in the water?
It's that. But I think at this point, the problem is...
That just means there's a lot of Coke bottles in the
water. Also, I wonder how it's ending up in the ocean. Because maybe I'm wrong, but... It's hard to imagine that there are enough beachgoers and boaters that just throw bottles into the ocean.
Do you think some trash companies dump into
the
ocean?
It would almost have to be. I mean, that would take.
And then since Coke and Pepsi are such popular things, that's why their stuff.
Right. Well, this study is going after them for being the top plastic producers.
Yeah.
Which at that point, you're punishing them for selling a lot of product. But yeah.
To your question, how does trash. I mean, we've all seen the pictures of islands with covered in trash. Obviously, there is a lot of trash in the ocean. How is all of it ending up in the ocean? Is somebody somewhere dumping trash?
I think they would have to be.
Or is there something along the line in the system where it's getting out of where it's supposed to be?
We just had the astrophysicist on the air. What about trash goes up, point it at the sun, send it to the sun? Right? That's a solution, isn't it?
Let's throw all the trash into space.
At the sun.
No, it's space's problem.
At the sun.
Not just randomly into space. Don't be crazy now. Let's have
a plan. See the story and the video of a baseball game of 7-year-olds with a 13-year-old ump. 13-year-old ump made a call that half the people didn't like, and it turned into fisticuffs and haymakers,
dude,
and a big giant fight among the adults.
I never had anything like that happen, but I was an ump when I was 15. It was technically the first job that I ever had that I got paid for. And I was 15. I would ump like 7 and 8 year old games, and there were times when I had parents just heckling me and coaches coming after me and getting, and I was 15. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the last real fight I almost got in was softball when Phoebe was 7, and she was warming up to pitch. And she was having trouble finding the plate. And the other coach goes, "Hey, girls, don't sweat it. This girl can't get the plate." Yeah. You can imagine how I responded
to
that.
Rude.
That's not true. The other day, you almost got in a fight with a guy in Miata.
That's true. Yeah. I want to fight.
But I want to fight
this
you.
This one was real close.
I want to fight.
You guys, I'm sorry to keep coming back to Meth Squirrel, but this story keeps developing.
Ooh.
Apparently, in the Facebook Live video that this gentleman posted, he claimed that his squirrel was the same squirrel that allegedly was fed meth. So he said he fled from the police, he circled back around, whistled, the squirrel came out of the tree, got on his shoulder, and went to the new location with him.
Well,
deputies say, we don't know, he might have two squirrels. There's no way of proving that this is the same squirrel that we released into the
wild. Everyone who has a meth squirrel, you have a clean squirrel. We all know this.
Yes.
Just in case the popo gets
somebody
called.
Somebody needs to do a urine test.
You bring in the clean squirrel, who's nothing but reasonable and cute. Duh. Welcome to your first day in drug dealing.
The camera-ready squirrel.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.